This is an interview with Mr. Stavros Lipapis. It's the 25th of April and we're speaking to Stavro at his home. The interviewer is Joanna Tsalikis, and this interview is being conducted as part of the Greek Migration Experience Oral Histories Project. This is an OIGA initiative and we're funded by the Australian Government's Your Community Heritage Program, sharing community heritage stories. Also present, facilitating our recording equipment, is Helen Haltis. Stavro, thank you very much for agreeing to be interviewed this afternoon. Can I ask you first to state your full name, where and when you were born?
Yes, I was born in Greece, the island of Kos, 15th of the 3rd, 1942.
Can you tell us a little bit about your family background, what your father did, for example?
Well, we're going back in the year 1914. My father, my mother and the background, I were born in Turkey and the place called Bodrum. And that's when I grew up until this revolution came up. Now, what I know, the background going back from great grandfather, he was rich. And what I know, you know, when he was coming to town, on a horse, he had bodyguards escorting him coming down. Also, my grandmother was rich. And now when the trouble started, Turkish soldiers took my grandfather, which he never came back, and my grandmother was left alone with two young kids, young girls. Well, they work in farm. They had a farms working, and the buyers that coming to buy the crop, they have warned my grandmother, when you sell the crop, grab the money and disappear, because things won't be as good as you think.
Did your grandmother, did she ever try to find out what happened to her husband, to your grandfather?
Well, it's hard to say, because with all the trouble, how can you... War was starting, you see.
Yes.
It wasn't very easy for them to find out.
So she was now without her husband.
Without husband and left with two kids.
And she had to survive and raise her family.
They had to survive and, you know, whatever. Plus, my father and everybody who's on the island, on the island. Now, when the trouble started, everybody went. Some relatives went to Crete, others went to Kos. They split everywhere. Now, in the trouble there, what I know, my grandmother with two kids, well, it was only women and children that happened to be on one island, on the Turkish side, for so many days, I don't know how many days, without food and water. And with their good luck, there was a plane going past above them, they started yelling and waving. Well, most probably the pilot saw what happened and he gave a signal, and that saved them, otherwise they would have died.
These were Greek planes or?
Well, they must have been a Greek plane because.
So what happens now? Your grandmother has been rescued with father and his siblings. So what happens now?
My father didn't know my grandmother until they went to Kos. What happens now? I don't know how old my father was, but it's when they settled in Kos, they were under the Italian government. Dodecanese was under the Italian government.
Right.
At the age of 16, my father left Kos. He started working as a seaman. Well, traveling around, at the time things wasn't very, very good, because still the trouble with the Greece with Turkey was starting. And what my father said, the age of 16, with no papers, no identification, he happened to be in Piraeus. And that's when Greece split in two, the king and the government. Now, my father happened to be on the government side. Well, king side, they had plenty of food to eat. Government, no. So, if they happened to get my father with no papers, he would have been in trouble because he had no identifications, you know. And his good luck was that the Kos Society in Athens, somehow he got in touch with them and they helped him to get whatever he had to get, and he was free to walk in the street because otherwise he was very scared. Now, for 40 days, what he certainly had nothing to eat, and he used to go down the beach where grass were growing, and that kept him alive for 40 days.
Can you describe what this
This grass, was? We call it in Greece, Armirithra.
Armirithra.
See?
Is it like a seaweed?
It's like a rice. Their leaves is like rice. Well, he had no choice. He had to eat it. And somehow, going around, he got to know somebody with a boat. They used to take people from one side to another. See, smuggle them or whatever. And as soon as the first thing he did when I went on the other side is bread. He was so, you know, being hungry and all that. So, all right, he got bread, plenty of bread, but going in the other side again, when he used to see the kids starving, he started giving them the, you know, bread to eat. And that was going on and on, you know, until he started again working with boats and, you know.
So he was still a young man.
He was 16 years old when all this happened.
How was he able to help your grandmother?
Now, my father, traveling around for 10 years, he went back to Kos. He left 16 years old, and he went, you know, he was a single man. And when he went to Kos, his brother couldn't recognize him.
His older brother?
Younger brother.
Younger brother.
Younger brother, see? So, of course, my mother grew up too. And as the time went by, somehow my father got his own boat and he started his own business. And waking, he met my mother and he fell in love and married her. Mm.
So because he started working so young, he was able to provide for his mother. Would that be correct? He would have sent her money or?
No, see what's happened. The captain of the boat saved his money. Mm-hmm. And when he left, he gave him the money, you see. It's different people at the time, you know, it's not, see. So somehow he managed to get his own boat and he got his pipe as a captain. And that's how he started. Well, it was hard at the time because war through the war, you know, and.
Now, your father was a very powerful figure in your life.
He was.
And I recall in our preliminary interview that he also spoke several languages. Is that?
Well, yes,
correct?
He talked Turkish, he talked mm-hmm. Italian. Not very well, but. You know, to do his business and all that, you know.
Can you talk to us a little bit about some of his experiences that he had at sea when he was on?
Yeah, well, you know, at sea you gotta be tough because he got hit three times, twice by plane and one with a U-boat. Three times he escaped, but. The third time, he lost everything.
Was he rescued from the sea?
Well,
or?
You see, now, during the war, the law says you can travel, you can do business, but at night you have to anchor wherever you are, stop, and start again in the morning. But it doesn't mean I won't hit you. You see? So the first time when he saw the planes coming, he threw the boat in the sea and left the boat and go, you know? Otherwise, they would have been dead. Mm-hmm. Well, the first time he saved the ship, second time the U-boat, Greek U-boat, he talked with the two captains, they talk, you know?
This was after they had been
after they hit.
Hit
him with the planes.
Right, but the boat was still
the
okay.
He fixed the boat the first time.
Right.
And he said, don't hit me. Attack the boat in harbor and we have to hit. So they hit it, but the ship was loaded and didn't do a lot of damage. He saved the ship. Now, by that time, the Italian planes came and give signal, you know, where the. But of course, wrong signals, you know. So. Anyway, the second time, my father took the boat out, and that's it. Because if I lose the boat, that's it, that's my end, you see. So my father's brother, he married his sister. In-law. He needed timber, he was a carpenter, you see. So he said, you have to go to Carpathos for timber, you know. Anyway, it went on and on and on and on. He changed his mind and threw the boat in the sea. And on the way, the planes. So they threw the boat in and left the boat, you know, that's it. he could have saved the boat if the boat was on a different direction. Mm. But the boat was going wrong direction and lose everything.
Now at this point he would still have been a young man in his 20s?
Yeah, or? Oh, no, he must have been 30s. Mm. He was young. Mm. 35, whatever, you know, at the end of the time.
Right, so he's now developed a lot of skills and he's become a captain at sea. He's obviously got a very strong sense of survival. Can you tell us a little bit more now about how do you come into the picture?
Yes, well, my father married my mother, having kids, you see, we were growing. Another war came as the time passed. So my father decided, he took us before the war started, you know, it was coming anyway. And from course, we went to Turkey, to Bodrum. That's where he was born. Of course, my father had friends there, born in Turkey, in Bodrum, and he knew people. So, when we left Kos, he took another two guys with him. He never took them.
Why is that?
Why? Because when we went to Bodrum, his friends, they approached him. And I offered him a job as a captain. We got these ammunitions for Americans. You have to take him there. You see? So, now, that was a chance in a lifetime because not only my father was getting paid for this job, they gave us a house to live free, food free. My father, my mother, and the kids would get paid.
So you were all provided for by the government at that time?
Turkish government.
Yes.
You see? Yeah. Now, my father talked to my mother, and somehow she agreed to stay there. So when he went to finalize, these two people took my mother out of it. And when my father came back, which he was set, my mother said, no, we go to Palestine.
How old were you at this time?
Well, I was very young.
Right.
I was very young. Now, so my father went back and he said, look, we're going back, we're going to Palestine. His friends and the Turkish soldiers begged him, look, stay here, nothing will happen to your family. Before your family dies, we die first. He didn't. Because if I wish to stay there, if we would have stayed there, the Italian government compensated my father for the ship that he lost, which this money now still stands in Italy on my father's name. And when we came to Australia, the Italian consulate got in touch with my father anyway. So
this money has never
been
retrieved?
No, still in Italy.
And there's no way you can claim this now because of the law?
The law is, at that time, let's face it, my father born in Turkey, but he was Greek. Now, we went to Kos under the Italian government, Certainly, you're Italian or Greek Italian or whatever. After the war, we came back, which we're coming later there, and the law says if you Italian naturalize, you get the money.
So you didn't actually have Italian citizenship?
No. Mm. You see?
All right, so now the decision has been made to go to Palestine.
Palestine. So,
can you tell us about this?
From there, we went through Asia by train, and we went to Palestine. In Palestine, there was about 5,000 refugees, Greek. Again, my father is offered a job as a director there, you know, for the whole 5,000. But my father said, look, I'm not so educated for this job. I want one job for so many. See? So they give him a job for 1,000 people. Every morning, the food came, and they had to receive this food for the people. It was a bakery, you know, they used to bake bread and all that, you know, and which was easier for him. And I can remember every morning, father had me 2 cans, and every morning I used to go to the bakery, he filled it up with milk and cocoa, to go back in the camp. By the time I went back, the kids used to
I got to it first.
Mm. Now, there's memories there too, because if the Arabs used to come with the camels and with watermelons and whatever, you know, selling it or whatever, you know. And
this would have been a very interesting experience for a child. How old, can you remember how old you were? Under 10?
Under 10. Mm. Under 10, under 8. I was young. Mm. And I can remember the Arab woman every morning walk in straight line to go and fill, go for water with the pots on their head, the babies hanging in the back, and they spindle making wool,
multitasking
for the jumpers, you know.
That's a very strong image for a little boy.
Also, I happened to be with my father and my other brother in the River Jordan. That's where I was baptized there, too.
In the River Jordan?
River Jordan.
And was the ceremony conducted by the local Greek
priest?
Yeah,
well, there was plenty there. Mm.
Most of the Greek refugees in the camp, from whereabouts were they from?
Well, they were
different areas?
You know, everywhere. They were from everywhere. Mm. No. It was beautiful, you know. I can still remember, you know. I got this guy here that happened in Palestine. A mosquito bit me. And in the hospital I went, it was a Nazi doctor, which he must have killed about 1,500 kids, gave him a needle. At the end, I caught him.
How do you know that he was a Nazi?
Yeah, well, you see, when my mother heard this, she would never let me by her side.
So she...
I was in the hospital there. They took me there for the... because I got an infection. And my mother wouldn't let me from her side.
So your mother must have known or sensed something about this man, or did she? How did she get this information?
You know, babies dying and dying. Well, they were there, you know. So eventually,
she worked it out.
They worked it out.
This was a very important time of your childhood. Did you make friends with a lot of the other children?
It was fun too with kids, you know, because I mean, going around there is, we used to go everywhere, you know, no trouble. I mean, you know, nobody would hurt you, or you know.
So
everybody knew each other, you know, in the camp.
So how long were you in the camp?
Well, we stayed there until the war was over.
And then what happened? What happened after that?
What happens after that? We came back by boat.
Back to?
To Kos.
To Kos again.
To Kos.
So you've done a lot of travelling for a little boy.
A lot of travelling, yes. Yes, I even went up to the Dead Sea. A lot of travelling, and I tell you what, when I came back to Kos, I really wanted to go back to Palestine. Every morning I was crying, I don't know, until that, you know, I forgot everything. You know.
So your life there was a very
happy one. It was still my mind there, you know, happy, you know, I say.
All right, so we're back in Kos now. What's the next stage of your life
now? Well, you see, things, after the war, things wasn't very bright in Greece. Of course, my father was working as a captain, but not only for us, for everybody. Let's fire aside, you know, the truth. So, now, my father decided to come to Australia. And this was a good thing.
What was the political situation like at that point, before you left in Kos, in Greece, perhaps?
Not very good. Not very good, no. It's our times when we left, and a few years after, wasn't.
There was conflict in the governments?
Yes, well, it's always. It was. And Greece will never change anyway, isn't it?
Well, okay. So now you decide to migrate.
Yes.
How old are you at this time?
Well, I finished the primary school in Greece. First of all, my brother came here. Mm-hmm. Then my brother and sister. And then 55, I came to Australia.
And how old were you when you arrived?
I was, 13 years old.
All right, so what happens now? You went to school and you're...
Well, I went a couple of years to school, but, you know, it was tough coming first. And you had to work. We have to work, that's it, you know.
What sort of work did you do?
Well, when I went a couple of years to school, and then at the 16 years old, I started working in a mikvah. Two of my friends had a show, so I worked there for a year.
Now, you also, in our previous interview, you mentioned that you became involved in sport.
Yes.
And in some ways, this also helped to change your life. Can you talk to us a bit about that?
That helped me a lot up to now. I was a good player anyway.
Well, can you tell us how
but
that happened?
With the people I got involved, Certainly, I was Greek. I didn't play for the Greek team.
What sort of sport?
I play soccer. Mm. I love soccer. I like soccer. So I played for the Austrian people.
Now that's unusual. Can you talk to us
it
how?
Mm. Well, these people, they, if I say something wrong for these people, I'm wrong, not them. Because they took me as a junior player. They look after me. Of course, I play good soccer. But I gave them my heart too, because what they give me, nobody.
Well, you must have had some talent at the sport.
Yes.
But when you say what they gave you, can you describe for us what those things were?
Well, I played for them, and then they teach me a trade.
And what was the trade?
Plasterers. Which this trade carried me up to now, and my kids achieved what I couldn't give them.
That's a very interesting situation.
Now, of course, I was working with people, with builders, and they knew what kind of person I was. So through me, my kids are where they are now, you know, and with a trade and good trade.
I'm interested in how you, how did they come to offer you the plasterer's training through the sport? I think that's an interesting.
Well,
can
you
talk
now,
to us about that?
I playing good soccer. They approached me to play for them, and the agreement was you have to teach me plastering.
Mm.
And they did. Plus, they look after me. See, I cannot say anything against these people, because when I stopped playing, I haven't met these people for 40 years. And 6 months ago, when they saw me, they all put their arms around me.
It's a lovely story. Your life in Australia has been a very positive one.
Yes.
I'd like you to talk about your experiences in Australia a little bit, apart from the sport and the trade. I'm sure you've got some stories, other little stories you could tell us about your life in Australia. Is there something that sticks out special for you?
Of course, Australia is special. Nobody can say anything about Australia. It's the best country.
And what about the places where you grew up? Have you ever been back to Bodrum or to Kos and those places?
Yes, I've been there and I will go there. You know, if you think, it must be in the blood, and somehow you want to go back and see them places. I've been to Bodrum many times with my father, and when I went back for holiday a couple of times, still I want to go and see that place.
And what about Palestine? That'd be a challenge.
You never know.
I want to go, there's a few more things before we finish up. Just a little bit about your mother. Because your mother, I know your father was a very strong influence in your life. How did your mother influence?
My mother was a very quiet woman.
It's a bit challenging to talk about it.
Mm. It's, painful woman. You know?
Yes, yes. Well, we understand that.
If you lose your father, you know, and young. Mm.
Your parents gave you a lot, Stavro.
Gave
what
a lot.
What do you feel they gave you
Australia.
Most of all? Australia. Well, that's a lovely way to.
Oh, yes.
It's a lovely way to finish, I
it
think.
It is.
Are there any last words that you would like to share with us before we finish the interview?
Well, I think I said a lot. And my father did the best thing coming here anyway. Probably because, you know, I mean, in life if you lose everything, you're coming to the end that, you know, you think it's the end of the world. And then you decide, well, I take this line, and if it comes good, you don't know. And many of us coming here, we didn't know where we were going, isn't it?
So he took a lot of risks and he
yes,
accepted
everybody,
the challenges.
Everybody. Even the whole lot of us took a risk to come here. Because we didn't know where we were going, isn't it? But at the end, it paid off.
Well, Stavro, you've given us a beautiful interview and you've established a home and a family and a career. And we'd like to thank you very much for your contribution today. It's been wonderful.
Thank you too.
Thank you.